You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. In the news of late is a proposed pilot program within San Francisco that would expand the city's ability to place mentally ill people into conservatorship. That is, to institutionalize them against their will if need be, and appoint a conservator to mind their affairs. The state legislation passed in September. The local enabling legislation has been passed by the Board of Supervisors and awaits the mayor's signature. But just what does all this mean beyond all the chatter? Tonight I am pleased to offer the first of a two-part program devoted to conservatorship. A future show will be devoted to the specifics of the San Francisco pilot project. First, let's talk a bit about just what is a conservatorship. With me in the studio tonight is Redwood City Attorney Paula Spano. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number to us here in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the local dialing area, call us at 866-798-8255. If you're not in San Francisco, let us pay the bill at 866-798-8255. As always, you can call regarding any question on the topic of conservatorship, particularly as it relates to mental illness. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. Ms. Spano's returning to join us once again and has been exceptionally generous with her time in participating in the Your Legal Rights program. Paula, let me welcome you to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Before we go further, I'd like to start with this, although I do see a call coming in now. But I'd like to start with a really general question. What is a conservatorship and why all the hubbub?
So a conservatorship is a situation where somebody has a mental illness and they cannot take care of themselves. And rather than just abandon this person on the streets or let them go down a path of self-destruction, there's a situation where they're cared for, meaning somebody takes care of their food, their clothing, their shelter, and their basic medical needs, but there's a trade-off. And the trade-off in these kind of conservatorships means you lose a lot of rights, such as the choice of where you're going to live.
Let me interrupt you for a moment. You mentioned for this kind of a conservatorship, and we'll circle back in a moment and talk about different types of conservatorships. But for right now, we're discussing an LPS, or what's often called a mental health conservatorship?
Yes, the LPS conservatorship is a special kind of conservatorship that a private person cannot begin the process. The conservatorship is started by a treatment team or started by a government agency. And so it's not a situation where a parent, if they're concerned, can start the process of an LPS conservatorship. And this type of conservatorship is the most restrictive on people's liberties and rights. In fact, I think the ACLU considers conservatorship somewhat akin to almost the death penalty when it comes to individual liberties. But there's a trade-off. You lose the right to have a say in where you live. You lose the right to refuse medication. You lose the right often to drive, to vote, to have a pet. You lose all of these freedoms and these rights. But the trade-off is that somebody takes care of you and your basic needs. And this type of conservatorship is only possible for those who are severely mentally ill. And the legal term for that is gravely disabled.
And before we go further, let's talk a little bit about what it means to be gravely disabled.
So the definition of grave disability is when somebody, by virtue of their mental illness, is unable to take care of their food, clothing, or shelter. And that is the definition of grave disability. Conservatorships are generally only possible when this inability lasts for an extended period of time. So you'll have some instances where people are temporarily, by virtue of an episode of mental illness, unable to care for their basic needs, but that with treatment and with the right setting and other things in place, they regain the ability to make these decisions for themselves and to care for themselves. The LPS conservatorship deals with those individuals that are in this prolonged state of grave disability. And that's when the government and the hospitals and medical professionals intervene on that person's behalf so they're not basically abandoned on the streets to, you know, I guess, suffer and not be able to care for their own basic needs.
So we're not necessarily talking about somebody who's acting a bit off. We're talking about people who, it's presumed, wouldn't be able to provide for their own basic needs and hence would suffer over a prolonged period of time.
Yes. And in fact, we're not only talking about somebody that's acting more than odd. We're talking about the mental illness being so debilitating that they just can't feed themselves. They can't clothe themselves. They can't, you know, get by in the world. It's not somebody talking to themselves or acting bizarre or going through a temporary situation where they're not being exactly rational. It's somebody who is in grave need of help, and that's when these things come into play.
So the man in his 60s who thinks he's Queen Elizabeth, or perhaps he thinks he's the Pope, may be able to function, and hence it wouldn't be appropriate. But the same person who, because of a mental illness, has to be reminded when to eat or has no capacity for providing for food or clothing or shelter, that's the threshold to really become a conservatee.
Yes. There's many behaviors that manifest themselves that call attention to themselves in terms of becoming involuntarily confined in a psychiatric setting. And some of the mentally ill people are running into traffic, are refusing to eat, are just completely unable to find any kind of shelter, food or clothing. And these are the type of people that end up in the psychiatric facilities for a temporary amount of time, which if their condition doesn't improve or stabilize and there's no third party that's going to intervene with assistance, these are the individuals that end up becoming conserved.
So this brings me to my next question. I see our phones are lighting up. For those that may be calling, be a little patient with us tonight. We're acting without our call screener. But just what does this entail, a conservatorship? Does it mean that somebody's going to be locked in a psychiatric hospital? Or are some people less secure than others?
So, well, first there's a process. It just doesn't go from, you know, 0 to 60 in 5 seconds. First, you have to be placed under a 5150 hold, which is a term that I think people have heard of. And that is a hold that can last up to 72 hours. After that time, there's a 5250 hold, which is a longer hold. And there's judicial processes that happen to ensure that the person truly is gravely disabled. There's a certification that's required by the treating physician or hospital. There is a hearing that people are entitled to if they are fighting the certification, and there are lawyers that assist people that are in these hospital settings on a temporary basis. It's only after a prolonged period of time that the hospital refers the matter for a conservatorship.
Before we go much into the procedural aspects, which we will, a caller has asked the question about whether dementia or Alzheimer's is considered a mental illness and whether that would make someone appropriate to this type of conservatorship.
Well, unfortunately, they are not covered by an LPS conservatorship, although they may be in dire need of assistance. The law was written very narrowly, and although there are lots of people that can't care for themselves for a variety of reasons, this LPS conservatorship doesn't generally cover dementia. It doesn't generally cover things like sexually disordered criminal offenders. It doesn't apply to, with very limited exceptions, those with prolonged and profound developmental disabilities. It's only a narrow category of mental illnesses and alcoholism. So currently, it does not cover people that have abused drugs and have done brain damage as a result of prolonged drug use. And it does not cover many of the people that would need such interventions or cannot care for themselves because they're very low functioning. This is a very specific and narrow type of conservatorship that only applies to a certain group of people.
By way of background, there's also a different type of conservatorship for people that have dementia or perhaps have severe neuropsychiatric problems. Other than mental illness, it has a different type of structure, different types of oversight. It's often something that's done by a family member that means well, although that's fairly rare for a mental health conservatorship, but for a probate conservatorship, less so. That is the subject for an estate planning program. It's probably not something we're going to get into tonight, but I wanted to comment on the fact that there is help out there, but it's different. And you probably need an attorney that does estate planning for that type of help. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we're talking about just what is a mental health conservatorship with Redwood City Attorney Paula Spano. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're calling from outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on the topic. Tonight, we're talking conservatorship, particularly as it relates to mental illness. And you can ask us your questions. You're not limited to where we may be in our conversation. So again, if you're outside of San Francisco, call 866-798-8255. Let's back up just a bit. And again, before we start getting into procedures, are we really, as some have commented, talking about putting people under the care of Nurse Ratched in the cuckoo's nest? Or not everybody is in that secure an environment.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that, because the reason that the LPS Act was passed in the first place was to prevent that kind of situation. So these conservatorships only last for a year because of that. And furthermore, they require that the person, the conserved person, be placed in the least restrictive placement given their symptoms and presentation. And so there's a wide range. There are board and cares where it's an unlocked home where there are multiple people that reside there and a staff giving out medication. There are room and boards that don't have full-time staff. They have locked facilities that are local, skilled nursing centers. And then they have more acute situations up to the state hospital. The closest one is Napa State Hospital. And it just depends on what the issues are and what the presentation is. So, for example, if you have somebody that can't care for their food, clothing, and shelter, but they're not aggressive, they're not causing any problems, they're not exhibiting any behavior that's against the law, they'll be in a low-level situation where somebody is on hand to give them medication, to take care of their finances, and to offer assistance. But if you have somebody that is really symptomatic and direly ill and perhaps assaultive and has not been deemed appropriate for these lower levels, then there's an escalation in terms of the placement and the restrictions, and some end up in the state hospital. It just depends on what is needed and what is necessary.
With that, let me turn it over to our callers. Our first caller, you've been very patient. Welcome, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay. I didn't get a clue here. Okay. I had an incident, and I want to talk about the upper ranges of dysfunction. I was in Santa Cruz with a friend, and we stopped for coffee at a place, and there was two people who were, like, very weird, and I just tried to be civilized with them. And she was in the car, and she was screaming, "Get in the car! Get in the car!" And it seems that in Santa Cruz, two of those people, or one of them, killed two people within the previous week or two, and I'm wondering, first of all, how we defend ourselves, and the other thing is, how are you going to take care of those people if they are really, really dangerous?
Well, I'll start with the second part first. If somebody is really, really dangerous, they will end up perhaps in Napa State Hospital, because Napa State Hospital has the most acute and symptomatic LPS conservatees. It also houses what we call 1370 clients, which are people that have been found to be incompetent to stand trial, and oftentimes for very serious offenses, they are also housed for treatment at Napa State Hospital. So what the mental health system does have is they have a range of placements, and it goes up from a locked facility, and Napa State Hospital is a situation where they're not allowed to, you know, walk around the town or leave the facility. They are always in their units, and that is the state hospital. So that's the second part of your question. In terms of the first part of your question, I wasn't there and didn't see what you saw, but if you ever have a concern about your own safety, the best thing to do is contact law enforcement for assistance.
Law enforcement is trained when they need to employ these procedures. They are, in fact, the source of many of these people entering the mental health system. And while conservatorships don't extend to mentally disordered criminal offenders, they're one basis to establish a conservatorship is somebody who is a danger to themselves or others. So that can result in involuntary detention while the person's evaluated and treated, and that's the beginning of this process. Thank you for joining us, and I'll turn to our next caller. Welcome. You're on the air.
Is that me?
That's you. Welcome.
Hi. So in this, I'm sorry, I've sort of skipped in and out because I have to listen to you on my phone to keep down the noise, background noise.
We appreciate that effort. Thank you.
If somebody that you're near and dear to that you can't, that you don't really have any right to, you know, a lover, an ex-lover, is in a place that you're worried about, what are the ways that I can, I've been to social services and I've been to the police and I've been, this person is not a problem. It's not, you know, there's not an alcohol problem. There's not a drug problem, but there is a problem with seeing to the needs of this person that doesn't really want to change things, but is clearly running out of resources and is sort of on a downhill slide here. So all attempts to help this person have sort of landed me in a place that's like saying, you know, no thanks. I'm shut out rather than being able to be helpful to this person. But it's really clear that this is a one-way street into not being able to take care of themselves. And so, what are the resources for a stranger to help somebody out that I can't, that I can no longer help financially? How do I help a stranger?
Well, see, that's an interesting and wonderful question, and I appreciate you asking that. The law has kind of a balance and a tension, and on one side you have individual freedoms, and you know everybody wants to make their own decisions and call their own shots, and some people make better decisions than others. And then you have the mental health system, which only applies if you have certain diagnoses, and it's a very narrow application. So if this person has a diagnosed mental illness,
no.
They don't?
No.
Oh, if they don't, then this conservatorship, unfortunately, can't apply to them. And just like the people with Alzheimer's that are suffering, that this doesn't apply to them as well, just because there is a need and just because the person cannot care for themselves doesn't mean that this system clicks in. It's very, very narrow. Only the people that have a diagnosed mental illness according to the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of a major disorder such as bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, alcoholism. These are the narrow categories that this applies to. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people in the world that are not caring for themselves in an appropriate way, and it's heartbreaking to watch that. But I'm not sure that there's much that you can do about that. At least there's nothing in this system that would assist somebody that doesn't have one of those narrow categories of diagnosis.
Although I do want to clarify something that Paula just said. We're in complete accord, but hearing your question the way it was phrased, and when Paula said, has the person been diagnosed, a diagnosis in advance isn't necessarily a make it or break it. If the person is truly suffering from the disorder and has stayed below the radar, and you call to the authorities' attention that this person can't care for themselves and that they may be suffering from depression or something of that nature, they do fit within this framework. The absence of having been seen before is something they will look at and consider when they're diagnosing what's going on with the person. But the previous diagnosis, the existence of a previous diagnosis in and of itself doesn't make or break under here.
Well, the other thing that I wanted to add, Jeff, just doubling back around, is that the LPS conservatorships are only, they're not, it's not possible for a civilian or you know, a concerned loved one to start this process, it has to be a treating physician or, you know, a medical facility that makes the referral to begin an LPS process. So this particular type of narrow conservatorship only applies when that happens, and that means there has to be a diagnosis. Now, sometimes somebody would have, like, no mental health history of psychiatric hospitalization, and this is their first encounter, and they're so acutely ill that it is possible for them to end up conserved. But there is going to be a diagnosis before that happens.
Right. Somewhere in the process, they have to be diagnosed. And sometimes this would start because a friend, a loved one, will contact law enforcement and say, so-and-so is wandering into traffic because they're in another world. And that will start the process. But yes, we're in complete agreement. At some point, this person has to be clearly suffering from one of these conditions, and there has to be a diagnosis, or they're not going to end up getting this level of treatment. There may be another answer from other sources, but it would have to be a mental health issue for this, and a pretty severe one at that. Thank you for joining us. I hope that was of some help. And I'd like to turn it over to our next caller.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I'm calling because I have a question about the discussion that you're having tonight. Are you specifically talking about conservatorship of more or less the homeless in San Francisco that don't have any family members and nobody's taking care of them? Is that what this discussion was kind of starting to be about? Because it's starting to... People are calling and talking about their personal things, but out talking about the supervisors passing a measure and waiting for the mayor's approval and conservatorship of people. So I'm curious, is it about the people in San Francisco that are walking around, have nobody take care of them, and look like they need to go to the hospital?
Some of those folks, I think you may have your phone a little close to your radio or something. We're getting a little feedback.
Okay, I'll shut the radio off.
It was that discussion in the news that gave rise to this program tonight. However, This is going to be a multi-part program. Tonight, we're laying general groundwork for just what is a conservatorship. What does it mean? Okay. How does somebody get involved? What does it do for the person's liberties and the like? The second program that we're going to do on this, which is coming in some weeks, will be what is the program in San Francisco, the pilot program, which expands somewhat the boundaries under which a conservatorship of this type or very close to this type can be applied to people that it didn't apply to before. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, somebody will be brought to the attention of law enforcement because they have that specific need, and it's a family member that brings it to their attention. So it's only appropriate that people ask about people they know, their own experiences and the like. This program in San Francisco is meant to reach out to a slightly broader population. Mm-hmm. It doesn't appear that it's going to affect that many people, but the nuts and bolts aren't completely figured out yet. And That's going to be the future show. That will be, as can be this, it can be people that are on the streets and aren't necessarily living in your home. But typically, this is somebody who's mentally ill. That can address somebody who potentially a drug abuser who's perhaps has a drug-induced mental illness or the like that can be treated.
So my question is, as a San Francisco native born and raised, in the last 10 years, I've seen so many people severely mentally ill just in the street, and they have nobody to take care of them. Nobody's washing them. They need clothes. They need food. They need showers. They need housing. And I think people are confusing that with homeless, all homeless. There's all types of people that are homeless in San Francisco, and there's quite a few that are mentally ill that do need help and have nobody in the world that's watching out for them.
One of the city entities that I've been in contact with in the last week, more towards the putting together the second part of this show, would be towards homeless and supportive housing in San Francisco. It is a serious issue, but there's all sorts of people that are homeless for a variety of reasons.
A lot of them are transient in the sense that it's a transient situation. They're going to be homeless for a brief period of time, going from one life to another. There's others that are hardcore homeless for different reasons. Some may be choice, and some that may be completely living within another world and where they are. And this may apply to some, but there's a whole very complex society, and people that fall into the cracks for lots of reasons.
My question was, is this being set up for a specific reason now that it's a San Francisco issue and the supervisors have voted and approved it and we're waiting for the mayor's approval? I was just curious if it was aimed towards something specifically, since we're at that juncture.
The more specific show will be aimed to address that program. It's soon to be up and running. It isn't yet. I think they want to get the nuts and bolts down before the mayor signs it, because it's a limited period of time. And once she signs that bill, once she signs that resolution, the clock starts running. But make no mistake about the fact that the mayor will sign it. There were a lot of people that came to the table on both sides of the issue about how broad it should be. And Mayor Breed testified in Sacramento last fall when they were talking about the state legislation. It's coming. The question is exactly what's it going to look like when it gets here, but it is coming. I'm going to ask you to hang on for just a moment. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.
As I understand it, in answer to your question, the program in San Francisco was designed to try to reach people that may fall just outside of the definitions of a traditional mental health conservatorship or LPS conservatorship. Maybe they're very functionally close, but they don't meet the criteria. And there are a fair number of them in San Francisco, but it's a very limited program. And the question is, where does it end up? It may get quite a bit bigger in time, but right now they're really trying to do some good and reach out to some folks that aren't getting help right now. I hope
that would be good. I've been saying for a long time that there's some people that are very mentally ill and need help. They need someone to take them and take care of them, and they don't have family members. They're just here walking around lost. So I'm really excited to see this program come into play.
I think we're all optimistic and hoping that this does some good. Thank you for joining us.
I will follow you on the next program.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Before we move into our next caller, a caller called with a very specific question. What about garden variety manic depression?
Manic depression is also known as bipolar disorder. That is an Access 1 diagnosis that does qualify for an LPS conservatorship, meaning it is the type of mental illness diagnosis that would qualify for this type of situation. But whether or not somebody is conserved with manic depression or bipolar disorder, or if they are able to live on their own, is just a very independent question. If somebody has manic depression, but they're managing their symptoms and they're able to take care of themselves, then there's no need for this intrusion by being put in a mental health system and having their liberties taken away. But on the other hand, if by virtue of their manic depression or bipolar disorder, they are delusional, psychotic, unable to care for themselves, and they're not able to be stabilized on medication, then this conservatorship could be put in place. It's interesting that the last time I looked into it, the mood stabilizing drugs that are prescribed for manic depression, they are not in the form that they can be put in a slow release shot. schizophrenics have some medications that they can get in a shot that is a slow release over 30 days, and each 30 days they get a new shot, and that controls symptoms a lot of the times. The manic depression symptoms, it's a oral pill that they have to take, and sometimes people struggling with mental illness either choose not to take their medicine or don't have access to medicine, and as a result, their symptoms go unabated. So if somebody with garden variety manic depression, as the question goes, what happens to them? The answer is it depends on how they're doing.
And just as we all have mood swings, we all have times that we're doing better than others. But when you're talking about somebody who's diagnosed bipolar, it's because those swings are beyond the boundaries that perhaps most of us would normally experience from day to day or week to week. And when you're talking about someone who's conserved, further beyond those boundaries to a point where it really affects their ability to function from day to day and provide those needs of food, clothing, and shelter. And with that, let me turn it over to our next caller. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. I'm sorry. The LPS, what does that stand for?
It stands for Landerman Petrus Short. It's the names of the three legislators who put this program together back in, I believe it was 1970.
Okay.
This was a nationwide movement all those many years ago. I now feel very old when I'm thinking about how long ago that was, because I remember it. There was a time before the movie Cuckoo Nest came out, before an expose by Geraldo Rivera, which went into the mental health facilities in some eastern states, when it was fairly routine to warehouse people. And this act in California, other acts in other states, really took a lot of the mental health system and shut it down. And right now we're left with this act, which is one of a very few, very limited bases by which somebody can be involuntarily hospitalized. And that, but it, the LPS Act was written by Landerman Petrus Short, three legislators.
So the LPS Act is still active. That still through the I only remember that Reagan sort of let everything, you know, open the doors and kick people out was sort of my reaction to it. Is this the thing that is still in place even though whatever he did to.
Well, the law is still on the books, but how it's funded and how it works in practice is different.
Okay. And then, I've noticed you've, San Francisco and Marin County, and you're, I don't know whether that was a public service announcement or not, but in the East Bay, do we have resources on the East Bay?
Absolutely. Every county in the state, every region of the state has a local bar association. In Alameda, the Alameda County Bar Association is available to with the lawyer referral service, as is San Francisco, who is one of the sponsors of this show. San Mateo is one of the sponsors of this show. They all have lawyer referral services to both provide and disseminate public information, do some work in the public good, also to provide very low-cost referrals for folks that are in need. If you bear with me one sec, I can give you some of those phone numbers.
Sure.
In Alameda County, 510-893-7160.
Okay. And these will be people. Uh-huh.
In Contra Costa County, 925-825-5700. They have lawyer referral services where you can call, you can get information, you can get a very low-cost referral to a lawyer. They also all maintain some sort of court-appointed attorney service that's run by the local bar association, usually second in line or third in line when the public defender has a conflict. They provide those services as well.
But in terms of the law that you were asking about, This law applies throughout California. I personally used to practice in Sacramento County, and now I practice in San Mateo County. And there's a profound difference in resources and a profound difference in the way that these situations are handled. For example, in Sacramento County, in this work, there were people that had been in the hospital literally 50 different times on involuntary holds that did not get conserved. And San Mateo County, on the other hand, is more proactive about conserving people that end up in the psychiatric hospital repeatedly. So a lot of it is resource-based, and a lot of it has to do with how much money is in the county, how many placements are available, how proactive the public guardian and county council are in that county, and that really determines the amount of people that are conserved. There are far more people conserved in San Mateo County by the population than there are in Sacramento County, and it's a profound difference. So sometimes we need to change the law, but sometimes it's a policy and resource issue.
Are we going to lawyers rather than social services here? I'm not really sure what a lawyer would do.
We'll get to that. That's really the remainder of the show, is what we do about it. But in essence, if you're looking to conserve somebody through the, for example, you have somebody rather than through mental illness that perhaps has dementia or some neurocognitive disorder that's in need of a conservatorship, a different type a lawyer would set up for you, a probate conservatorship. You'll be a family member that was assisting in most cases. Lawyers' roles here, there's always going to be a lawyer representing the entity, the public guardian, aging and adult services, whatever that entity is in that county. But additionally, there are lawyers who work with somebody who is being conserved, who has been conserved and wants to get off, to assist them to make sure that they have their day in court, that they're heard, that their rights are protected, that we don't cast that net so widely that somebody who's basically functional will be conserved, or somebody who perhaps doesn't need the level of restriction that they're suffering from. And
let me ask you something quickly here. Just to, I will hang up and listen to the rest of this. What happens to what is considered a family member in these changing days?
That's actually the next thing we're going to talk about, and that is what happens if there's someone in the family that can help, whether it's a sibling or whether it's a non-related extended family member, whatever it may be, somebody else is willing to step up and help out and help the person meet their needs. How does that relate to what we're talking about, and how does that change the formula?
So my last comment before you hang up, thank you, is that partnerships in a world where we're not getting married, we're having all sorts of, women, men, and heterosexual, homosexual, all that. What's a marriage? What's a family, and all that? And what are those people's rights that weren't able to be married under the old and ever changing rules? Now, how does that figure into this? Would be helpful to me. Thank you.
Well, the in terms of the narrow question of an LPS conservatorship. No conservatorship will be put in place if there is an offer from a third party to assist with food, clothing, and shelter. This could be a partner, a relative, a non-relative. It could be an agency such as Turning Point, which is a social service agency, or anyone or any entity that is going to intervene on the person's behalf and provide assistance with food, clothing, and shelter. And that evidence of that needs to be presented in court in the form of a declaration or actual testimony. But in answer to your question, the law of LPS does not put restrictions on family or non-family or marital relationships.
The only restriction, in essence, would be some showing that this person or this entity is able to provide that level of assistance and that this person wouldn't be beyond that level of care. I see we lost the call, but I hope that we've been of some help to you. You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW-FM 91.7 in San Francisco. Tonight we're talking a bit about just what is a conservatorship with Redwood City Attorney Paula Spano. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number in the studio is 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134. If you're outside of San Francisco, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call about any question you may have on the topic. That's conservatorship of the mentally ill. You're not limited to where we are in this conversation. 866-798-8255. We are running low on time. I did have a couple of things I wanted to ask you about, but let me first turn to the caller that is waiting. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. You're on the air. Caller, you're on the air. We seem to have lost one. Let's flip to the next one. Maybe they'll come back. Welcome, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, welcome. You are on the air. Welcome.
Oh, okay. I just got the operator. My brother has paranoid schizophrenia. He was diagnosed in 1980. And hello?
Hello.
We hear you. You're with us.
Okay, good. So, and he was homeless for several years. I was able to get him off the streets and into housing. But the house, he lives by himself inside a house. He's not in group housing. And I'm his only, I'm one of two siblings, but the only one who's willing to take care of him. So he lives out of town. He lives further up north, so he's like about 3 hours away because he would get lost in services here. I'm interested in getting a conservatorship for him, but it's been very difficult for me to because he presents very well. He refuses to go to a psychiatrist anymore. He refuses to take any more medication. And very often, even though he has been jailed, he's been hospitalized multiple times. He has committed a felony. There's plenty of records of him having severe mental disability. He gets denied SSI when he has gone down to the behavioral health center. They are like, no, you look like you can take care of yourself and you have a record of employment, so no. And these hurdles are just like very, very, very challenging. And I'm wondering, I hear all sorts of information about this new law that's coming in, and I hear optimism on one side and I hear a lot of skepticism on another, and I hear outright hatred of it, and I'm very confused about all of it because I would love to be able to have access to a conservatorship to be able to have some kind of financial and legal help to get him into a psychiatrist, which he really needs. And I'm not sure how it's going to help somebody like me. Again, I'm a sibling. I'm the only sibling. I'm of limited means. You know, I don't make a six-figure income at all. I'm over 50. He's in his 60s.
Well, I first of all, I really feel for you, and I think you're a wonderful person to offer this kind of assistance. I have a few comments. I'll start out with the positives. In terms of the SSI, I think it's pretty much built in the system that they deny the first application almost no matter what. And a lot of people that have ended up on conservatorship that I've talked to over the years had to apply multiple times, even though it's obvious that their history is such that they're disabled. I think that there's kind of a net out there that they don't want to overpay, or you know, they think they're weeding people out, but what they're doing is denying righteous candidates who really need the assistance out. So I would actually encourage you to try to reapply for the SSI. Because
how does one do it though when he doesn't want to go? Because the last time I went, they said no, he absolutely has to be here. I tried to get him to go, and he jumped out of the car in the parking lot because he just did not, you know, because going to systems like this is what a lot of people don't realize about how many families really do want to. It's not that I'm a wonderful person. I think most families actually really try hard, and it's like all the odds are completely stacked against you, starting with the person who's suffering, because usually it's paranoia that's getting in their way. But also what's getting in the way is their own traumatic experiences within the system. I don't blame him for not wanting to be hospitalized. I don't.
We seem to have lost the caller. Are you with us? Sorry that you're cut off. One thing that... Are you back with us? No. One thing you should consider if you're still listening is, even if SSI says no, SSI is merely the level of support they're getting, financial support for somebody who's disabled. And the standard for SSI is significantly higher than that for Social Security. So if he's had a history of employment paying into Social Security, he may be able to get some level of benefits, maybe not as much, out of a Social Security application than he would with Social Security and SSI combined. But the threshold may be lesser.
But I want to speak to some of the frustration that caller had, because I think the new legislation that's being contemplated in San Francisco is a partial answer to a larger question, and that is, you know, why are we so narrow in the people that we are intervening for? Why don't we help more people? Well, clearly, there are more people in need. Clearly, people are in need even if they don't want the help. And clearly, people are frustrated. And so the larger problem is this tension between individual freedoms and the law and restrictions. And then there's the further problem of lack of resources that compounds all of this. So it is a frustrating situation, and there's no easy answer to these questions.
I see we have two more callers on hold. Next caller, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, is that me?
That will be you. Welcome. You're
okay.
On the air.
I think you said in the beginning that the conservatorship only lasts for 1 year.
It lasts 1 year. It can be renewed if the situation still exists from year to year, but it's reviewed and renewed every year.
Okay. Can be renewed. The next one is, what happens if you are already on SSI or SSDI? Does that go towards your keep in the facility when you get conserved?
When you get conserved, you lose your ability to enter into large contracts, and somebody else manages and controls your finances. And some people that are conserved have some kind of savings or wealth or personal assets, and some people have absolutely nothing. But the public guardian's office is in control of paying the bills and making the financial arrangements. And then those people are also appointed an attorney who oversees and double checks all of the accounting to make sure that, you know, everything was spent appropriately and that the person is being adequately cared for. So
it's all automatic. This happens automatically once you are conserved.
Yes.
And also the renewal process, that happens automatically too?
The person that is conserved has a right to a jury trial on the issue of grave disability, and there has to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the person cannot care for their food, clothing, or shelter. That's the legal standard. So they're, while they're entitled to a jury trial, of course, many of the people that we're speaking about either don't want a jury trial or can't even, you know, recognize what that might be. But they're always appointed an attorney to help assist them, make sure that they have their day in court and that their rights are protected.
So in case your conservatorship ends after a year and it's not renewed, how now will you get, will someone then get help to get back on SSI or SSDI?
They have a public guardian's office could possibly assist, but they also have lower levels of help in the community that are possible, such as if somebody is not good at paying bills, they have payee services of people that can assist with financial issues, but not take away a person's right to choose where they live. So there are other services on a lower level available in the community outside of a conservatorship. And they're usually, by the time they're on a conservatorship, the public guardian's office does reach out and tries to get financial assistance from the government to help offset the cost of care. So hopefully those that would still be in place when the person is off conservatorship.
Okay. Thanks.
Sure.
Thank you for joining us. We're really running out of time here. Can you want to take about 30 seconds, tell people where they might find resources? Any last thoughts you have?
Well, there's a lot of need out there in the community. If you see somebody that you believe is in danger because they're mentally ill and they're running into traffic or acting unsafe, then I would encourage you to call law enforcement. Law enforcement is specially trained to deal with these situations. If you're a family member and somebody is detained and you have concerns or they are not happy about the involuntary confinement hospital setting that they're in, there's a group called Patients' Rights that can be of help. In terms of payee services, that would be something that would vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So that would be something to just Google payee services, and those resources also, they're out there. And then there's also lower level social service organizations that can provide some service of a minor nature. And those, again, vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, from town to town. So
you've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Jeff Hayden. Tonight, we've been discussing LPS or mental health conservatorships and where there might be some help. With me in the studio tonight was Redwood City Attorney Paula Spano. Paula, thank you for once again coming in and joining us.
Oh, sure. Thank you.
And we'll be back next week with Your Legal Rights. And in 2 weeks, we'll be back once again with our Call a Lawyer Night feature. And with that, our thanks to you for listening. For our ailing production assistant, Martin McLean, and at the controls, Joanne Marr. I'm Jeff Hayden. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information.